I'm Daniel Atlin. Welcome to Messy, where I have conversations with leaders about how they navigate and make sense of the mess they find themselves in. Do leaders really matter? In a messy, complex world, especially in organizations that serve the public good, the answer isn't always clear. That's what we explore in Messy. Today on Messy, Laurentian University's president, Dr. Lynn Wells, joins me for a conversation on turning the page and changing a damaging narrative, rebuilding community trust, and leading with purpose when the ground keeps shifting. We explore how to lead alongside rather than from the front and use process and purpose as anchors. We also talk about healing institutional trauma, staying student first when pressures mount, and what it takes personally to keep showing up with empathy, discipline, and hope. Let's get into the mess. Dr. Wells has served as president and vice chancellor of the Laurentian University, and she started on April 1st, 2024. She began her career at the University of Regina, serving as acting dean and associate dean research and graduate studies in the Faculty of Arts and finishing up her time there as associate vice president academic. And following this, Lynn was appointed vice president academic at First Nations University of Canada, where she actively supported national reconciliation and worked directly with Indigenous communities, students, and employees. At McEwen University, she served as the inaugural associate vice president, students and learning. Dr. Wells also served as provost and vice president academic at Brock University from 2020 to 2023, where she held a concurrent appointment as interim president and vice chancellor for 15 months. Welcome to Messy, Lynn.
Thanks, Daniel. It's great to be here.
It's quite an interesting journey you've had, but of course it only captures a really few arbitrary markers and highlights. CVs and life journeys are messier than they appear on paper. And I'm quite fond of that Kierkegaard quote, that life can only be understood backwards and it must be lived forwards. Now, do you want to make sense of your journey a little bit and talk about how has you, a scholar of British literature, ended up being the president of Laurentian University?
Great. Thank you. Well, as you say, it's a compendium of highlights, but of course, there's a much larger story underneath. So it starts really with me growing up in a working class family in Windsor, Ontario. I was only the second person in my family ever to go to university, my brother being the first. He went to the University of Windsor, but I always knew I wanted to go. When I was 5 years old, I wanted to be one of three things: a tap dancer, a secret agent, or an English professor. So those were my three choices. I couldn't dance, and the Cold War could have ground to a halt. So being an English professor really was the best route for me, and that was excellent because I loved reading. I loved literature from the time I was a small child. I was always reading something and always writing something, either about things that I'd read or writing fiction and poetry.
It's fascinating how even as a young child, you imagine such distinct paths: creative, curious, and purposeful. I often wonder how these early instincts shape the kind of leaders we become.
I pursued degrees in English at York University, but in fact, English and French as well. I loved French literature and wrote my master's project on a French poet in an English program, which was somewhat unusual. But coming out of that, I wasn't quite ready to do my PhD, and I ended up working for a university president. His name is Harry Arthurs. He was the president of York University in the late 80s. And I started working for him when I was very young, a kind of strange role. I was called the administrative officer. So it was a combination kind of executive assistant, you know, general dog's body, policy analyst, you name it. I did a lot of things, and it was an amazing job. I learned a great deal from him, and he was a university president who really made an impact on York. And if you visit York campus now, you might not be conscious of it, but you'll see many of the accomplishments of President Arthurs during that time. Many buildings that were built, many programs that were established. He was a visionary leader, and I learned a great deal from him. So it was always in the back of my mind. I thought, well, you know, that's really interesting work. I really see the impact of that. But, you know, I went on, I did want to be an academic. So I went back, did my PhD at Western and loved doing that. I love my discipline, which is contemporary British fiction. I write about London. I write about ethics in literature. I read about a number of things, and I really loved doing my research, writing my books and articles, and teaching. It was a great joy in my life. I ended up at the University of Regina in 1997 and was, you know, enjoying my career there as a professor. But I still had this bug in the back of my head about university leadership. And I guess I showed a bit of an aptitude for that, given my past experience. And soon was asked to serve as associate dean in the Faculty of Arts, as you mentioned. That led to a brief stint as acting dean in the same faculty, and then as associate vice president academic at the University of Regina. And that was a really wide sweeping role. My job was to work with across faculties, across all the academic areas of the institution to bring them together in collaboration. And I loved it. It was a great job. But at the same time, there was a crisis brewing on the campus of First Nations University of Canada, which is a federated institution of the University of Regina, had gone through a challenging time in 2005, some critical matters around financial management and governance. And there was a report that was meant to address those problems, but it was not acted on. And this led to a second crisis in early 2010, where the institution lost all of its funding and faced imminent collapse, really. It was a really dire situation. And in the midst of that, I ended up joining First Nations University of Canada as the vice president of academics, so the senior academic officer, but also for a period as acting president.
That's such a defining moment in your leadership. Stepping into an institution in pain and uncertainty, it sounds like where sense-making becomes both a compass and at the same time a lifeline. And it's a recurring theme in your journey.
It was a really unique challenge for me to take that on as a non-Indigenous person, going into an institution that had experienced a great deal of trauma. Many people had lost their jobs. Many programs had been cut. There was, you know, great concern about the long-term stability of the institution. So joining that institution at that time really required me to get out of my comfort zone in a big way, right? But also to learn. I did not know much about First Nations culture. I had spent a lot of time in ceremony, listening to elders, going out into communities. It was an enormous and deep learning experience for me. And, you know, I'm enormously grateful to have had that opportunity. So I spent 7 years at that amazing institution, worked with a newly reformed board, a new leadership team, really to help bring the institution back to a point of stability. The enrollments increased, things were going well, and I knew it was time for me to move on. It was obviously very important to have First Nations leaders in those seats. So in 2018, I kind of put my head up over the parapet and thought, all right, where am I going now? And this amazing opportunity to join McEwen University, downtown Edmonton, as the inaugural Associate Vice President, Students and Teaching. If your listeners don't know much about McEwen, it is a completely undergraduate teaching-focused university. So it was a great opportunity to work in an environment where students and teaching are at the forefront of everything they do. So my portfolio spanned all student services pretty much, and I learned so much there working with frontline student service personnel, with students directly in many cases. So it was, another deep, rich learning experience.
That must have really grounded your understanding of what truly matters to students. It's refreshing to hear leadership that emphasizes connections with real purpose of an academic institution.
I've been really blessed with those throughout my career. So, you know, 2 years there, loved every minute of it. But then an opportunity came up to join Brock University. So this was the journey back to Ontario for me after over 20 years in Western Canada, an opportunity to return to Southern Ontario, where I grew up, and to join Brock, which in, was an institution that was very much like the University of Regina, where I had been for so long, a comprehensive university, very much embedded in its community, really on the rise in terms of its research mission. Really growing in that respect. So there was lots to benefit from being at Brock. They, had not had a permanent provost for a number of years when I arrived. So there was a great desire there for stability in that provost role. And I was happy to take that up. I think we did some amazing things. I just saw the notice the other day that the Burlington campus that I'd worked on when I was there is now open. So new engineering program, lots of things got developed over that space of time, and I'm really happy to see those things come to fruition. Again, loved the people at Brock, learned a great deal in that context. And one of the things I learned was how to function as a university president, which seems, again, if time is a flat circle, I got to the other side of it. A little over a year after I joined the institution, the president there, Gervin Fearon, went on to become the president of George Brown College. And the board asked me to serve in that concurrent set of roles that you mentioned. So I was both provost and interim president for about 15 months. And most of that was during the height of COVID. Which was just, a crazy time for leaders in the university sector. It seemed every other day we were either opening the university or closing it. We were constantly reacting to new mandates of various kinds, restrictions, trying to develop online learning in a really full way under great pressure, navigating Senate to make the changes that were needed to keep students learning. And being really mindful of the pressures on student mental health and student progress during that time.
Every institution had to make impossible calls during the pandemic. I'm curious how you and your team at Brock kept your sense of purpose going when the worlds changed daily.
It was a time that, again, really challenged me to grow as a leader, to make high pressure, very difficult decisions that affected everyone in the institution day by day, to work, well and carefully with the Faculty Association, which was a key partner during all of that, and Senate as well. So that I said, another time in my life where I had to learn to do things I'd never done before. I had a great team around me. And for me, it's always about the team. If I have the team around me, I feel like I can, accomplish lots of things every day. And I had a great team at Brock that supported me. So that brings me at long last to Laurentian University. And of course, like everyone in the sector, I followed very closely what was happening at Laurentian in 2021 with the declaration under the Creditor Protection Act, great concern for colleagues whom I knew at Laurentian, and just trying to understand, as everyone, what happened, how did it happen, why did it happen, but also being drawn to a community that, like First Nations University, had gone through a very difficult time, had suffered, job losses, the community impact, the uncertainty for students. All of those things were really familiar to me from the First Nations University context. And I thought when the opportunity came up that this might be a place where I could make an impact, given the work that I had done before and the kind of cumulative experience I had from all of these other institutions and contexts, that, at this point in my career, I could come and try to work with this community to help to put Laurentian University, on a path to a future that's much more stable and secure. And it's been amazing.
Well, what a story, what a background story. And I love it. And I think it shows a little bit about, how you're have a little bit of a passion for the sector for certain, and a curiosity about how to actually help organizations and universities in particular be all that they can be. And I like actually how in some ways I think you're bringing into some of your early curiosity and your career ambitions. I think you've been tap dancing a lot during your career, maybe not done on a physical floor, but right. Definitely in that sort of environment. And I think actually, in a lot of ways, being a secret agent in a lot, you have to think through things. You've got to imagine possibilities. You've got to deal with a lot of information that's not incomplete. So probably actually you've been able to somehow combine those along with your passion as an English professor and educational leader. So that's an amazing, I think, accomplishment. So well done, and cobbling together all those things together into, I think, one sort of interesting career. Yeah, Laurentian, of course, is well known for, unfortunately, for the wrong reasons, I think. But it's a really, really interesting sort of organization itself. It's unique to the North. It's unique in the region. And I think it's unique in Canada. Do you want to maybe talk about exactly what you sort of found there and what you see that it's been like after a year and a half being there? And maybe the surprises and ahas along the way?
There's so much to say about this institution. So, I'll start with the fact that this is actually Laurentian University's 65th anniversary. And that's in Canadian terms, that's a fair bit of longevity for a university. And I always try to remind people of that history, that yes, there were a couple of difficult years there, but there were 60 years before that, where the university educated many people in the North, was a real magnet for learners from Northern Ontario. Laurentian has long been a leader in mining education, engineering, geological science, occupational health and safety. I mean, this is the place to be if you're interested in mining education, but so many other areas that really support life and prosperity in the North, from health science to education to the arts to environmental programming, Indigenous programming. We have what's called a tricultural mandate, which means that we operate at all times in three perspectives, one being the Francophone perspective. And Laurentian University for 65 years has been serving Franco-Ontarians, particularly Sudbury, Greater Sudbury region has a very high Francophone population. And this very much is the university that has served Franco-Ontarian students for decades. And we have many, many programs in French that are excellent and programs that are bilingual as well. But we also honor and value and promote our First Nations, Métis, and Inuit cultures. We recruit many Indigenous students from the North and from across the country, and we do everything we can to promote Indigenous culture on campus. If you walk around Laurentian campus, you're going to see every sign pretty well in English, French, and Anishinaabemowin, which I think is unique in the Canadian system to have that kind of tricultural signage. So that's something that really appealed to me. You heard me say that I spent a good chunk of my life working with First Nations and Métis people in Western Canada. I also have a background working with Francophones, and I spent a great deal of my youth when I was doing my education. I worked on an immersion program for Francophone students who would come to Ontario every summer at Glendon College to learn English. So that I've always had this attraction as well to bilingual and Francophone education. So, a really unique institution. In terms of the institution itself, probably what I've learned the most is the fierce loyalty that people have to this institution. I have people, who talk to me all the time, taxi drivers, people in the grocery store who say, people who have never gone to university, who say, I'm so glad that Laurentian is doing well. It's our university, right? This place is enormously important to people in this city, in this region, and everyone has a connection to it, even if they've never studied here and no one in their family has ever studied here. in that community university connection is so important. We really feed one another. The synergy between the university and the community, when that's strong, they both thrive.
Yeah, well, it is absolutely a stunning community. And when I was recently up there to visit you, I was amazed actually by the change and transformation over the last few decades. And you could really see the vibrancy of Sudbury, and actually how Laurentian is really the center, I'd say, in the heart of a lot of that vibrancy. So it's an incredibly special community. I think in some ways it's like an urban island in actually the boreal forest in some ways. Yeah, but it must have been interesting. Well, interesting is such a loaded term, but with all that pride in the community, and with how close and the connection is between, you know, the university and everyone around, I would say, I guess the situation at Laurentian must have been a real challenge for people. They must have taken that a lot personally. And that was probably actually, I guess, a lot of what you faced when you got there is probably a community living with trauma from what they went through. How was that when you got there?
Yeah, well, absolutely. It was palpable. First of all, I wasn't here, of course, when things happened in 2021. So I've kind of secondhand knowledge, like most people do. But, I'm conscious every day of the impacts of that experience. First of all, I think it really was experienced as a kind of shock. Very few people were aware of the depth of the problems or the actions that were about to be taken. So I think it really was experienced as like a traumatic shock by people who worked in the institution, by the students, but I said by the whole community, right? It was something felt by the whole community in a very sudden and alarming way. And the after effects of that, obviously people lost their employment, and that's still really, really difficult for those people and for the people here who were called their colleagues and their friends. But for the people who remained here through the difficult times, they were under enormous pressure and stress to keep going, often with very little capacity in their units. They always kept focused on supporting and serving students, which is truly admirable under the circumstances. But they went through a lot. And there was, I'm sure, always that, kind of concern of, is the institution really stable now, and so on. So one of the pillars of our strategic plan is a bit unusual, I think, compared to other strategic plans, which is, it's called Valuing Our People. And it really speaks to the importance of helping people in the institution to heal from that trauma, to have an opportunity to speak about their experiences, to have access to resources to help them in that recovery. But also to regain a sense of confidence and trust in their leadership, in the board, just in the whole project. So that's one of my daily preoccupations, is what can I do as a president? What can we do as a leadership team to help people feel more grounded, more secure, more confident? And that's a daily exercise. We keep at it every day. I try to really focus on pride, on accomplishment, but, I don't want to just, have rose-colored glasses or, to be kind of what's that phrase, toxic positivity. Someone use that with me. Because that comes across as insincere. We are doing great things here, but we have challenges like everyone else. And one of the things that I think we need to work on the most is when something goes wrong, which it occasionally does, as it does in every university, it's not a sign of the apocalypse. It's just, we have a problem, we have a challenge, we're going to get together as a team, we're going to look at our processes, we're going to look at our resources, we're going to draw on our supporters where we can and move forward, right? But with the understanding that it's not always going to be perfect, it's going to be great, but it's not going to be perfect.
Absolutely. And I think, there's a couple of things in there that you probably have to be especially mindful of. First of all, the eyes of a lot of people are on Laurentian outside of Sudbury as well. So the province is, I'm sure, has a heavy interest in the activities there. And certainly, you know, Laurentian in some ways is known around the world, I think, because of what had happened as well. So that puts that added pressure on you as well, which makes in some ways, you know, challenges and opportunities too. But one of those challenges is that, as you mentioned, universities are ordinarily risk adverse. And now you've got that added layered on top of it. So it must make it really interesting as well.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you mentioned, you know, the how Laurentian is perceived really far and wide. This is the English professor in me coming out, but Laurentian, I think, became for a while at least a euphemism, right? A euphemism for university dysfunction. Right. And that's unfortunate. There were some of that when the First Nations University of Canada crisis happened as well, that it became for a while a euphemism for dysfunction. And so one of the things I said during my job interview was that my most important job will be to change the narrative. And the only way you can change a narrative is by repeating it in a different way. So the narrative about Laurentian now, when I hear people, as often comes up, I'll be in a meeting and people will say, even without thinking, oh, well, we don't want to be another Laurentian, right? It's used as a noun, a collective noun there. And, you know, I will always pipe up and say, you know what, Laurentian is doing just great. We're building, our enrollments are growing, we're introducing new programming, we're hiring new faculty, we're making a huge impact in our community. Our research is, you know, unparalleled in the fields where we excel. We need to stop using that euphemism in that way, because it is, in fact, untrue at this point. It's not an accurate euphemism, but it's also very hurtful to the people who work here and the community that has supported this institution and the people who have graduated from this institution. So as we work every day here to shift the narrative, to remind people instead of that long history of this institution and a long history of successes, you know, in teaching, in graduating students, those students getting great jobs, in doing high impact research, in supporting this community in many, many ways. Changing that narrative is, I think, my most important job as president, so that we can, you know, people move forward, institutions move forward in a positive direction when they have a positive sense of their own identity. And that's really what we're working for here.
It's great to see, actually, the evolution, I'd say, of Laurentian into its new whatever you want to say, whether it's 2.0 or whatever its new incarnation is after 65 years. You know, you're becoming more relevant as well in different ways. You know, universities around Canada are all faced with the challenges of the status quo. In some ways, I guess it's a little bit of an opportunity in some ways to be able to reinvent yourself actively, because oftentimes universities won't change, but you actually have that platform for change that's quite evident. And you've been able, I think, to take advantage of it and build a community that actually is responsive and able to be innovative because of that. And I love the fact that, you know, you're actually in a stronger fiscal situation than a lot of other universities out now, which is ironic, but just, you know, you're coming out of this strong.
That's right. And that's something that, you know, most people would know about Laurentian is that, you know, of course, the university received a lot of support from the provincial government during, you know, the difficult times. And we're grateful for that. We went through a lot of the radical restructuring that a lot of universities are now facing. Right? Those hard decisions, brutal decisions, in fact, were made quickly during a period of great stress, which is not ideal, but those decisions were made. And now the institution has a structure that's much more sustainable. And as we build back programming, faculty capacity in different areas, you know, we're doing so in a really judicious way with lots of planning. We have a new strategic plan. We have a new academic plan. We have a new strategic research plan. You know, we're working closely with Senate, which to me is that Senate relationship is really important in universities to recognize the true collegial role of Senate as setting the academic strategy in the institution. So I said we're methodical. I'm a great believer in good process, good governance process, good planning processes. Mm. You know, almost every day, you know, someone will come to me with and say, can we do X? And I will say, I don't know. What's the process? Right. That's always my answer is tell me what's the process that we're going to use to come to that decision. And I was find if you rely on good process, you make better decisions in the end.
And I think that that's really great for people to see, understand what's happening underneath the hood, as it were, of Laurentian. And I think it's actually interesting, the parallels between Laurentian itself and the city of Sudbury, too, because the city of Sudbury went through some tough times, you know, where the environment was known for looking like the face of the moon for a long time, denude of greenery and things. And over the course of many decades, it's been, you know, rejuvenated. And it's actually, you know, probably one of the most beautiful cities that exists, with trees everywhere and greenery and nature surrounding it. So it's an interesting parallel of that as well.
Yeah, maybe I could say a little bit about that. You know, it's one of my favorite metaphors for what we're doing at Laurentian is this idea of regreening. And so for people who don't know, you know, the city of Greater Sudbury, you know, years ago, decades ago, as you say, looked like the face of the moon, right? And in fact, I gather they would actually do training for lunar landings in Sudbury because it looked so much like the surface of the moon. And this was because of the, you know, sulfur rain from the mining operations. But, you know, 30 years ago, there was an effort to regreen the city. And that effort was led by people here at Laurentian, by Dr. John Gunn, who's just retired, one of our Canada Research Chairs, who is really an environmental pioneer, Dr. Peter Beckett, you know, there are many others who led an initiative to bring this region back to life. But before they could do that, they had to restore the landscape by, you know, by sprinkling certain compounds that counteracted the sulfur. And the final tree was planted by Dr. Jane Goodall, whom we just lost a week ago, but she was a great friend of Sudbury and often came here. And if you ever watch her film, Reasons for Hope, the first story she tells is about the regreening of Sudbury and how this is a story about how a place that seemed to have been, you know, dead and not able to be resuscitated was brought back to life by a community that cared about it and who put in the effort to bring it back to life.
That's amazing. And it really is an incredible story of regreening, as you say, regeneration. And I think it's a great metaphor for what you and the team in the community are doing at Laurentian as well. Now, maybe we'll just go back to a little bit more of a question about leadership. And, you know, Sure. You have got a very fascinating career because you've been in many jurisdictions in Canada. And for those people who are outside of Canada, you may not realize, but education is treated very differently according to each province you're in. It's not a national sort of connected system. It's actually very provincial in mind. So that makes a very different sort of approach that you can see in different jurisdictions as well. And, you obviously enjoy, I'd say, working in these complex purpose-based institution, purpose-focused institutions, but you also enjoy, I think, the mess because, you know, you can see that. You've taken positions that have been a little bit, I'd say, pretty messy, actually, at the start. So what do you think is key for leaders to actually navigate their roles given this mess and your experience in all these jurisdictions?
Yeah, you know, that's a huge question. I mean, there are many things that I don't know if I can speak for leaders generally, but I think I have a pretty good sense of what works for me. The most important thing for me is that I realize that it's not about me. I'm a temporary passer through in this institution. My job is to be here for a period of time and to work with this community, but it's not about me or my ego or my career or, you know, whatever laurels will come from that. It really is about working with the people here and building up the strengths of the people here, helping them, as I said, regain their confidence to be bold, to be entrepreneurial, to have vision for the the future, to feel optimism and excitement. You know, for me, that's the real kick in these jobs, is being able to work with a community and be part of that community, to provide leadership, but not, certainly not leadership from in front. It's leadership alongside with, you know, everyone in the institution, with the understanding that people are at different places, right, in their recovery from CCAA or their confidence in the institution or whatever, you know. And I try to really accept people where they're at, to understand that their experience of this institution, no doubt in many cases, is very different from mine, right? There have been people here who have been here for 30 years, right? I've been here for a year and a half. You know, what they know about this institution far outstrips anything that I will know, and I can learn from that. Right. So that's the first thing is I don't make it about me. I try to be a very approachable leader, and, you know, just a person in the institution who has a role and an important role, but is a member of that community. I would say the other thing that I do is I don't take things personally. You know, my job is to come here every day, to work with people, to listen, I said, to follow good process, to try to build a future. When I go home at the end of the day, I turn it off. I am a person who, I don't take my stress home with me. And I think that's very important. I don't think I could have been doing these jobs for now a little over 20 years with no break if I had, you know, a different kind of personality where I, you know, stressed out about things at home or couldn't sleep or, you know, didn't take care of myself. You know, I think I would have been worn out in these roles by now. But I'm very much the opposite of that. You know, I give myself the grace to make mistakes in my job. Sometimes I do my best, but I'm human and fallible. I give that same grace to the people who work with me, that they are human beings who are doing their best. And if there's a problem, we'll address it. But I think you need to be human and humane with people every day, understanding that these are complex roles, complex environments. You know, the pressures around funding are constant. You know, the societal attitude towards universities has unfortunately declined over the years. So, you know, it's hard to work sometimes in that context where people don't understand or maybe don't respect the importance of what we're doing here. So I said, it's really important for me to not obsess about my own place in this. I said, I'm a footnote in history. I hope a decent one when it's all said and done. But I said, my job is to do the best that I can for this community while I'm here and to look after myself at the same time.
Well, I like that. I like everything you're saying there, and the need to be empathetic, to recognize that it's not about you. You know, the importance of, I think, telling the story, and that you're actually, you know, the person that's telling the story today, but it's only you're just holding in some ways that stick or the microphone today that's going to be passed on to someone else in a very short period of time.
That's right.
And that importance of taking time outside of the workplace to recharge and to have a little bit of a buffer, I think can only be done when you recognize that it isn't about you, that the institution is something outside of you, is one role that you play. I also like, because it goes very well to the next question about, you know, talking about the ability, you know, to make mistakes too, and that you recognize that that's a big part of actually leadership too. So I like to ask people about, you know, what's a mistake they'd like to share? Because we often just hear on people's CVs, all the highlights, and it looks like, you know, people are just climbing to the peaks of mountains all the time, and there was no effort to get there. So would you like to share with me maybe a little bit of a failure that maybe have happened in your personal career, and how that worked and what you learned from it?
As I said before, I'm ultimately and completely fallible, so I'm okay with that. I would say, in terms of failures in my career, I'm not going to be too specific, because, you know, it's fairly easy for people to identify specific contexts, and I don't want to do that. But I would say probably the greatest failures I've had in my career relate to times when I've been trying to work with people whose interests were not aligned with mine. So, for instance, during COVID, sometimes it was difficult to move things forward in a way that we had to move things forward. Is that we, you know, when I was at Brock, we opened the university, we closed the university, we opened the university, we closed the university. But, you know, I mean, we all remember what that time was like. It was dreadful for students. It was dreadful for everyone. And it was, you know, at times really challenging to hear everybody's interests. And, you know, there were people who were very concerned about being on campus, about not being on campus, about, you know, I mean, it was back and forth. So, you know, I think we all did our best. And I know I certainly did my best during that time. I certainly didn't make everybody happy. But, you know, the thing I always go back to as a university leader is if you're doing the best thing for the students, you truly believe you're doing what's best for students, you can't go wrong. That really has to be at the heart of every decision that we make is this the best thing for the students at this institution? So that was something, you know, I really struggled with during COVID is, am I doing the best thing for the students when I have all these competing voices in my ear, right? You know, public health and the ministry and, as I said, you know, the faculty and the staff and the community around us and protesters. And, you know, it was challenging to do the best that we could. And, you know, certainly not everything I did as a leader during that time was perfect. But, you know, I think it was the best I could do under those circumstances.
No, absolutely. And you're right. You saw that during COVID, you know, entirely. And it was such a challenging time because, you know, people talk about pivoting. Well, you have to pivot because you don't have, you know, you have to improvise and invent because the story is always changing. It wasn't your story that's changing. It's the story out there with the virus, with the world, with the government's response to it. And people actually, you know, expect the president of a university or a leader at a university to be in charge and controlling that. And it's like, no, you aren't. You're at the mercy of actually the latest variant, the latest government news, the latest round of infections too. So, and people think you're holding back a story and no, it's just there's a different narrative that gets created every day. Now, So, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, the different pressures you face as a university leader and as a leader in other institutions too. So what do you do to keep you going to extract from the situation when the pressure gets tight? What are the things that Lynn does to escape the challenges and the day-to-day grind of leadership?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned earlier, I do really focus on taking care of myself. You know, I get older as people do, and I'm dedicated gym person. I go to the gym every morning. As you know, I skipped this morning just so I could do this podcast, but that's an anomaly. So getting that daily exercise for me is very important. It's, you know, it keeps me going physically, but also mentally. I take that opportunity to listen to podcasts, for instance, such as yours, and to, you know, stay informed about the world, but also, you know, not to kind of jump into Laurentian world the minute I wake up. I give myself an hour or two to really feel grounded in the world first. You know, other things, I'm a huge fan of tennis. And as I told you, I went to Wimbledon this summer with my son. I can watch tennis for hours and hours and never be bored. I love it. And I'm also a huge basketball fan. My husband played varsity basketball. My son is an excellent basketball player as well. He played on Team Saskatchewan when he was young and went to the United States on a basketball scholarship, played at McEwen for the years that he was there and is still, you know, playing. So I became a huge basketball fan. And, you know, I'm anxiously awaiting the true start of NBA season. Preseason doesn't count for me. So, you know, there are things that I do that are, you know, seem very remote from my life as a university president, but I get great enjoyment and satisfaction and relaxation out of doing those things. And of course I read. I still, you know, love to read all the time.
Yes. Now, of course, this is about the podcast is called Messy, Making Sense of Leadership. So any advice for people considering a role at a complex, purpose-based institution such as a university? What would you advise them?
You know, I'll start with something I said before is it's great to do these jobs, but you shouldn't do them if it's about you, right? I mean, I think you can do these jobs with great impact and success if you go in, as I said, understanding that you're there for a period of time, that you bring to the job, you know, the best of yourself every day if you can, and that really what you need to do is lift up the community that you're in and not try to get it focused on. If your goal is to be rich and famous or to acquire a certain level of prestige, then I would say don't do it. If you can do it, understanding that what you're really there is to make a difference in the lives of students and communities, to help people generate knowledge and to share that knowledge, you know, that's great. But for me, it's all about the outcome rather than, I said, what this gives me personally. You know, I certainly find the work that I've done rewarding. You know, what is most rewarding for me is, in fact, what I hope I've been able to accomplish in making other people's lives a bit better in one way or another. And the other thing I would say is don't do these jobs. When you find yourself, if you find yourself getting bitter and exhausted, get out. Right? Take a break, take a leave, come back if you can, but it's not good to continue in these roles if you're jaded or cynical. You can't afford it. People around you are looking at you as a role model every day, right? You know, I understand that if I come to work in a sour mood, that I'm going to set a tone that's going to affect other people's days. And I don't do that. Fortunately, I'm not cynical or jaded. I still really love what I'm doing, but when the morning I wake up and think, I've had enough, I just don't want to do this anymore, you know, that's the day I'll start transitioning off to another part of my life.
Well, that's great advice. And I especially like the jaded and cynical piece, because when you're jaded and cynical, I think you're looking backwards in some ways. You're actually living in a little bit of the past. Whereas, you know, I think the great thing about the roles like yours and leadership roles in these institutions is the ability to build hope and to look forward into the future as well and build something sustainable. So that's great advice. I think you've offered. Now, any final thoughts about the mess of leading? Is there anything you haven't shared that you'd like to share now?
I would say that this is a really challenging time to be a leader in a Canadian university. As I said, the pressures are there. You know, it's hard to come in every day and say, okay, the tuition is constantly frozen, right? We're constantly having to squeeze budgets or, you know, do more with less or be more efficient, which is, you know, a common word in our sector. You have to be more efficient and more efficient, you know, even when you're at the edge of what you can do in terms of efficiency. So, you know, that's a lot. But it also means that we need good people to do this work. And I would say one of the best things you can do is to kind of build that experience. As I said, I've been very fortunate over a number of jobs, in a number of jurisdictions, you know, to have learned a great deal. As I said, I learned a great deal at First Nations University about Indigenous education and reconciliation. I learned lots at McEwen about what it means to be a student-centered leader. I learned lots at Brock about, you know, program development, academic restructuring. I learned a lot as an associate dean research about supporting the research mission. So every job has taught me something. And I think, you know, kind of building your reservoir of knowledge and experience is really important. It helps me every day to navigate. You know, when I hit a difficult situation, I think, okay, well, you know, how did we deal with this in another institution? How does the sector deal with this? I would say, it's very important to give yourself the time to develop as a leader. To take that journey, to take the time to build some experience, to not try to race to the end, but to actually give yourself the time to grow as a leader and to get some mentorship. You know, one of the things that I wish I had done more in my career was seek out mentorship around my own leadership development, to have an executive coach, to have, you know, people around me who were kind of advising me on, you know, where are you trying to get and why. If if you haven't taken that step and you're interested in leadership, don't go on the journey by yourself. It's lonely and it's really hard to do it on yourself by yourself. And if you face a failure or a rejection, you feel it very much more intensely because you don't have a team around you to help buck you up and keep you going. So.
What great advice. Embrace the role and learn from everything. I think, take that lived experience and build on it. As you said, trust the process and keep on going back when there's a question, about what's the process you take to get things done. But I really like the fact as well that you focus on the fact that it's a long journey. And in some ways, it's a marathon. Mm-hmm. So make sure you have others that are there alongside you in that race. Thanks so much. I really appreciate this conversation, Lynn, and I think others will too. Your authenticity, your passion, your desire to make a difference, even in challenging situations that a lot of people would run away from, I think, say a lot about your own personal character, I think, and fortitude too. So thanks so much for sharing. And I said thanks again for being such a good, I'd say, tap dancer, secret agent, English professor, and above all, I'd say, a human-based leader. So really appreciate this conversation. Thanks so much. I think this podcast conversation with Lynn is a masterclass in steady human leadership. We heard how Laurentia is moving from euphemism for dysfunction to emblem of renewal, why valuing our people belongs at the center of a strategy, and how good process, student-first decisions, and honest storytelling can rebuild trust after trauma. If this episode resonated, follow Messy with Daniel Atlin and share it with a colleague who's learning through complexity, and leave a review to help others find the show. Until next time, keep making sense of the mess.